Welcome to PFT Live. I've been doing triple duty this week, and I'm getting pretty tired. 3 hours of the Dan Patrick Show, then we come down here from Milford to Stamford for PFT Live, and then we'll be on NBCSN, 6 o'clock Eastern time tonight, half hour, with Kevin Gilbride and Ross Tucker, I believe, in studio, but I'm not 100% sure, because I'm not really 100% sure of anything this week or ever. One thing I am sure of, because the Browns told us so, Brian Hoyer will be the starting quarterback when Cleveland travels to Pittsburgh to start the 2014 regular season. Now, remember, after Monday night's preseason loss to Washington, Pettine said that he will decide who the starting quarterback is based on who gives us the best chance to win the opening game. The opening game, not necessarily enough games to qualify for the playoffs, not necessarily enough games to avoid getting everyone fired, and the coach has been fired in Cleveland each of the last 2 years, just enough to win the opening game. And when you think about the schedule in Cleveland, this really does kind of make sense, because the Browns open at Pittsburgh, then they come home for 2 games against the Saints and the Ravens, and then they have a bye week. They have an early bye week, and that may be a good thing this year for the Browns, because if the Browns go 0-3 in their first 3 games, there's a good chance that that's the point at which Johnny Manziel will be deemed to be ready. And I think one of the big factors in all of this that's been overlooked is what the players want. I know at one point, Dante Whitner, new safety this year after stints with the 49ers and the Bills, said that the locker room was split 50-50 between Brian Hoyer and the rookie Johnny Manziel. I think it's always been closer to Manziel being well under 50%. With Hoyer far closer to having unanimous support, especially among the veterans, because the veterans want to win now. The veterans don't want to be part of a work in progress. They want the best player, and they want the guy that they know can do it. And we know that Hoyer has done it because he did it last year, even though he only did it for 3 games. And he was injured early in that 3rd game. Yes, he did well overall. We haven't seen much from Brian Hoyer. And let's not forget, Hoyer was available to anyone who wanted him last offseason, when Mike Pettine was the defensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills, and they had nothing behind E.J. Manuel. They could have signed Brian Hoyer. They could have brought him in. They didn't. Now, I know he's not the GM, but this isn't like some must-have guy that Mike Pettine has decided I've got to work with. This is the lesser of two evils for now for the Cleveland Browns. And I go back to what I have been saying all along. Once you make Johnny Manziel the 22nd overall pick in the draft, you have made him your starting quarterback. And if you haven't, you're asking for trouble. And if you do this competition where one guy gets part of the reps with the first team offense, the other guy gets reps, and then you split up the reps in the preseason games, whoever gets the job isn't going to be as prepared as he could be. So now the challenge will be to get the most out of Hoyer while having Manziel ready to go if and when Manziel ends up becoming the starter coming out of the bye week when the Browns travel to Tennessee and the schedule becomes a lot softer and more manageable for the Cleveland Browns. Contract negotiations neither soft nor manageable for J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans. Now, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I thought that going into training camp, J.J. Watt, one of the few guys from the 2011 first-round draft class who may actually consider holding out, he didn't. That doesn't mean he won't at some point in the future. Here he is yesterday talking about his contract situation.
I don't know if they feel that way or not, but I sure hope I've put in all the work and I've put in everything I can do to hopefully earn it. So there's people out there. I get paid to go after quarterbacks. There's people who get paid to decide how much I get paid to go after quarterbacks. So I'll let them all decide that. But all I can do, I can't worry about it out here. All I can do is practice football.
He's got the right attitude. And his point was that the players from the 2011 draft class who have gotten new contracts after their third NFL seasons, because by rule now, you can't give a draft pick a new contract until he has completed 3 years in the NFL. The teams that do it have concluded that the players have earned it. So if the Texans haven't given J.J. Watt his contract, that must mean they don't think he's earned it. Which is a roundabout way of saying, you know what, I think I have earned it, and he has earned it. He's been Defensive Player of the Year. I think he was Defensive Rookie of the Year. It was down to him and Von Miller. I think Von Miller actually won it. But either way, J.J. Watt has proven that he is a force in the NFL. And last week, owner Bob McNair sending out some signals suggesting that maybe they'll let this play out. And with all of the contracts that we see now, not all of them, but a lot of them, this year-to-year proposition, pay as you go, at some point, a guy like possibly J.J. Watt is going to say, you know what, if it's going to be pay as you go anyway, I'll play out my contract. I'll put in my 4 years. I'll play my option year. You can franchise me for year 6. You can franchise me for year 7 at a 20% raise. And then year 8, when he would otherwise be getting quarterback money or maybe even more than that because the franchise tag, the percentages go up. It's a 20% raise for the second time, 44% raise for the third time. Either way, huge money in year eight. That's when you'd hit the market. Maybe you play your 7 years with Houston, collected all the money, and then become a free agent and go back to Wisconsin and play for the Green Bay Packers because that's where he's from. And one of these days, one of these veteran players is going to say, instead of doing one of these year-to-year deals that gives me a nice chunk of money now, I'm going to continue to bear the risk of injury. I'll go buy insurance. I'll protect myself against a catastrophic injury, and I'll play year-to-year until I get the opportunity to go to the open market, unfettered by the franchise tag, unrestricted by any leverage or argument that my current team would make. I'm going to go hit the open market, and I'm going to be one of those guys that's holding up a new jersey for a new team on the first day of free agency. And someone's going to do it with this quarterback contract, year-to-year stuff with Colin Kaepernick and Andy Dalton to a lesser extent. Somebody at some point is going to say, forget it, I'm going to go year by year, and we'll talk when I finally get a shot at the open market. Speaking of the open market, the NFL is using some of the principles of the open marketplace, reportedly, according to the Wall Street Journal, when it comes to the halftime act at the Super Bowl. Now, in recent times, the performer at halftime of the Super Bowl, the big extravaganza, the thing the NFL decided, you know what, we better make a compelling halftime show or people will change the channel like they did 20 years ago when Fox had a 20-minute live edition of In Living Color, early 90s. The next year, here comes Michael Jackson, and every year since then, it has been a big-name act. Now, instead of the performers playing for free because of the publicity that they get and the boost that they get to their earning potential and everything that goes along with being on the biggest stage in the world for that 12 minutes of the performance, the NFL now reportedly suggesting that the candidates, the finalists to be the performers at this year's Super Bowl halftime show, actually pay for the privilege. The three finalists, according to the Wall Street Journal, are Coldplay, Rihanna, and Katy Perry. And I always wonder how this stuff gets out there. Is this good old-fashioned scoop-generating journalism, or is this the NFL choosing to leak it to the Wall Street Journal because the NFL wants to send a message to anybody out there who isn't Katy Perry, Coldplay, or Rihanna that, you know what, if you'd like to be the performer at the halftime show, you have a chance if you are willing to pony up the kind of money that we're looking for. And if you're talking about an act that is trying to maybe get a resurgence, try to bring back the old days, come back and have a big tour, well, you can give up 20% of what you make after that Super Bowl performance, or you can keep 100% of nothing because you may get nothing. You may get no buzz, no interest. Think about the buzz and the interest that you generate by being the halftime performer at the Super Bowl. I don't know that I agree with this. From a business standpoint, I understand it. The NFL is the biggest brand in the world, or at least in America right now, and they can leverage anyone and everyone. They already leverage the Super Bowl host cities. They can leverage the performers. They leverage everyone. At some point, though, Mark Cuban is going to be proven right. At some point, the old hogs get slaughtered line could come into play. I think you run the risk of turning the fans off because ultimately the Super Bowl halftime show is going to be determined not based on merit but based on who's willing to give the NFL the best deal. And in a roundabout way, the NFL gets in this business, especially if their payment is a percentage of the future tour revenue. The NFL's in the business of promoting acts. The NFL takes on a vested interest, and that kind of happened with the movie Draft Day. The NFL got money up front. The NFL got a piece of the back end. And if the NFL learned anything from its experience in the movie-making business, maybe they should just stick to football because Draft Day didn't do very well. Hope they got a lot up front because I don't think the NFL made much on the back end. On the back end of this break, we're going to talk to Tony Grossi of ESPNCleveland.com. I talked to him earlier today on the Dan Patrick Show. He was so good, we're bringing him back for this show. We'll be able to talk a little bit longer. We're not constrained by hard breaks and all the other stuff that you deal with when you've got a one-hour radio clock. We'll be back with Tony Grossi, and then we'll wrap the show up by talking to you. It's PFT Planet Time. We've got your tweets. We'll open the phone lines. Before we talk to you, we'll talk to Tony Grossi of ESPN Cleveland. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. Brian Hoyer, the new starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. For now, and we don't know quite for how long it will be, and we still don't know why it took so long to get to this point. But the Browns have made the decision one day later than expected. Mike Pettine thought it would happen on Tuesday, barring unforeseen circumstances. The unforeseen circumstance was both guys stunk on Monday night, so he chose between Brian Hoyer and Johnny Manziel entering practice on Wednesday. That means Hoyer will be the starter for the third game of the preseason, traditionally the dress rehearsal for week one at Pittsburgh, Hoyer versus Steelers. Joining us now to talk about that issue and everything else relating to the Cleveland Browns, Tony Grossi of ESPN Cleveland. And let's focus on this Hoyer-Manziel thing. The timing of it just bothered me from the standpoint of diluting the preparation of both guys to get ready for week one by stringing this competition along. How much more ready would Hoyer be if they had just given Hoyer the job from the outset of training camp?
I think he would be a lot more ready, Mike. I think we've all, I know I have, underestimated the other obstacles Hoyer is facing, namely getting over the mental barrier of his ACL surgery and his repaired knee, and also diving into what's his fifth offensive system in 3 years. I certainly didn't think he'd have this trouble because he has not looked like the same quarterback. But I think in answer to your question, had they just given him the job from the start, he'd be a lot more advanced.
And I still can't get over the idea that you draft Johnny Manziel with the 22nd pick in the draft. You use the Trent Richardson first rounder from Indianapolis to move up four spots. You take Manziel. If Manziel's not your guy right away, why are you using the pick on Manziel? I thought the NFL wasn't about drafting a quarterback and putting him on the bench for a year.
Well, I think they, you know, it's the extraordinary guy who goes right in and doesn't fail. And there have been some recent cases of that. But I think Pettine is still old school in thinking that if you have a guy that you think is capable of winning already on hand, there's no harm in holding off on putting the rookie in. And I don't think there's, you know, I think RG3 and Andrew Luck kind of spoiled it for a while there. But when a guy's only played 2 years of college like Manziel has, it's asking a lot for him to come in and pick things up. So I didn't think there was a chance of him starting, but I thought Hoyer opened the door because he certainly had a rough preseason.
Do you think Jimmy Haslam wanted to see Johnny Manziel start from week one and that his preference was either not a factor or disregarded?
I think if you connected him to a lie detector test, yeah, I think that was his preference. But I don't think he wanted it at any at all costs. You know, I think he was going to defer to the coaches. He probably had a rooting interest in that because this guy is good for business. There's no doubt about it. It's interesting the way their schedule comes up. The first game after the bye is at Tennessee, which will be Haslam's first game in his home state with his new team. So the pressure will be on Hoyer those first three games.
Well, and you know what? That's a great point when you look at the schedule. At Pittsburgh, then at home against the Saints and the Ravens, and then the bye week. If the Browns go 0-3, is it not the appropriate moment to flip over to Johnny Manziel with 2 weeks to get ready for that homecoming by Jimmy Haslam to Tennessee?
Yeah, no doubt. No matter who they played in that first game back from the bye, I mean, it's just coincidental. But, yeah. I mean, a decision like that, it's perfect time with the bye. So, 0-3, I think will definitely make a change, especially the way Hoyer has looked. You know, I think Pettine really is giving Hoyer a vote of confidence here and pretty much sending the message, you know, we need you, so step it up. And if he goes 0-3, all the pro Manziel people will say, see, we told you, let's get the other guy in there. So, yeah, this is not the end. This is only the beginning of this quarterback soap opera.
And, Tony, that makes it even harder for Brian Hoyer because now every incompletion, every bounce pass, every mistake, every bad decision, every turnover, every failure to do exactly what Kyle Shanahan wants him to do, Brian Hoyer is going to think, this is it. I'm going to get benched. I'm going to get yanked. The big hook is going to come out and pull me off the field. How do they get him to relax and not worry about getting benched and just become the best quarterback he can be?
I don't know if any human being could, you know, could keep those thoughts out of his head. I mean, it's especially the only way, Mike, would it, if the rookie was someone other than Johnny Manziel, if it was Bridgewater, Bortles, Derek Carr, whoever, there wouldn't be that pressure. But Mandela is bigger than life, and I, you know, Hoyer's gonna have to somehow be extraordinary to fend this off. I mean, he got a break because he's better than what he's shown. But the fact is, he hasn't shown much. So he's got to pick it up, no doubt.
And, you know, there's a similarity here between Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow in that you can't flirt with Tim Tebow. You can't just have Tim Tebow hanging around because he's too much of a distraction if he's on the roster and he's not playing. And now with Manziel, once you take Manziel and you know who Manziel is, I think it becomes very difficult to say, okay, we're just going to put him on the bench for a while. If it was Bortles or Bridgewater or anybody else other than Tebow, you could get away with it. Now they're going to have that distraction. They're going to have that problem. And I there's no good way out of this maze unless they do go 0-3. Manzo comes in, turns it around, and proves that he should have been the guy all along. What happens if Hoyer leads the team to playoff contention? Let's project it forward to 2015. Would they let him go in free agency and then give it to Manziel, even though Hoyer will have led them to the postseason for the second time since they returned to the league?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I don't know that answer because, you know, Hoyer really wants to make it work with his home team. So they've got that going for him. His agent is Joe Linta, and Linta's not going to accept an offer that is constructed, you know, for a part-time starter. So question is, will the Browns make an offer to Hoyer that reflects a long-term commitment? And with Manziel already there, how can you make that long-term commitment? So it's interesting. I think the incentive there is for Hoyer to do what you just said, and then he'll prove to everyone else he could be a winning quarterback and he'll have options.
And then
that might make the decision for the Browns.
And then he walks away in free agency because the alternative is another Derek Anderson, Brady Quinn controversy that I think they're still trying to recover from. They haven't yet been in position where they have to recover from the loss of Josh Gordon for the full year, but at some point that decision is going to be made. What are you hearing about when there's going to be a ruling? And I know there's different opinions on whether or not it's going to be somewhere between 0 and 16 games. What are you hearing about when, and what are you hearing about how long it'll be?
Well, the new timeline, you know, people are saying Friday. I don't know where it's coming from, but I've heard people say, you know, sometime Friday afternoon, the legal arrive at some, you know, announcement. You know, I'm wondering if this turns into a StarCaps case, if the decision goes against Gordon, and maybe the league is aware of that potential and trying to craft some global agreement. But I'm getting nothing definitive on when and what they'll rule.
Yeah, I've heard nothing about any settlement talks, and I can't imagine that. Because I know that there have been reports that Harold Henderson, the hearing officer, can do whatever he wants. And in theory, he can because there's no appeal of his decision. But the way the policy is written, it's either 0 games and no violation or a violation and a mandatory 4-year suspension. And the only way you land in the middle is if you get a negotiated compromise. There's been no talk of negotiation. But if the NFL wants to engineer this thing for less than a full season, they could pull it off. I just don't know that they've made any effort, and I don't know that they will. And if they apply the terms of the policy as written, doesn't matter with the A bottle, B bottle, doesn't matter that he was only 1 nanogram per milliliter over the limit, he's going to be gone for a full year. What's the plan if he is gone for a full year? Will they try to find help externally, or will they just go next man up?
Well, they've got to go external because they have no next man up. I mean, the receivers as a whole have had a underwhelming is a charitable to describe their camp, and people saw it in the game Monday night. It looks like that every day in practice. I don't know why Josh Gordon was playing in that game in the third and fourth period, to be honest with you. Nobody could explain it from the team because he looked like he lost interest after the first ball that was thrown behind him. They're going to have to do something. This is Ray Farmer here. This is the rookie GM who's done things that have drawn pretty good reviews, but the blind spot for the receiver position is on him, and he's going to have to react accordingly.
On the defensive side of the ball, you know, Ray Horton did a nice job last year getting the most out of that unit. DeQuell Jackson's gone, T.J. Ward's gone, replaced by Carlos Dansby and Dante Whitner. They were top 10 when it comes to yards allowed last year, average yards allowed per game. We've kind of forgotten about the defense with all the issues on offense. Where do you think this defense is going to be?
Well, you know, the defense historically here has always started out well. But because of the offense has so been so bad, it wears down. The Browns had six leads into the second half last year and couldn't hold any of them. And some of it was due to the offense not being able to extend drives. And then finally the defense collapsed. You know, unless the offense can contribute, the same thing's going to happen, in my opinion, this year. The weight of the team can't be on that one unit. So it has the potential of being real good, but, you know, the offense has the potential of being real bad. So if they get some help, they should be strong. That number 9 rating that you cited last year, that was a real not reflective of, you know, giving up so many leads late in games and all that. So that wasn't a true reading. But we'll see. It should be better than last year.
Has there ever been a top 10 draft pick more overlooked than Browns cornerback Justin Gilbert?
No, he's in a great spot, you know, and he's kind of taken it in stride from the beginning. I think he realized this isn't a bad way to sneak into the league without all the attention on you. And he finally got on the field Monday night because they had an injury to another cornerback, Buster Skrine. There's no competition. He's the starting cornerback opposite Hayden. And he really looks good. I mean, physically, when he's a big corner. He's much bigger than I even expected. So they're pretty confident in him, and there's no pressure on him. He's just given the job.
Who emerges as the top tailback this year? Ben Tate, Terrence West, or someone else?
I think it's going to be Ben Tate, but the durability question, you know, they have is a concern. I think Ben Tate is perfect for what Shanahan does in the running game. He had some nice runs Monday night. He averaged over 5 yards a carry. There's a lot of talk about Terrence West since he's been drafted. He looks like a very good young player, but I think Ben Tate, if he could stay on the field, will be their feature back.
Tough division for the Browns with the Ravens, Bengals, and Steelers hanging around. Any realistic chance that this team contends for a playoff berth?
Mike, the only way that's going to happen for the Browns is if they end the quarterback carousel. I mean, they've played three quarterbacks more than any team because of injury and ineffectiveness. So if Hoyer comes through and is able to play 14 games, I think there's a chance they'll all develop as an offense. But if it's back and forth to Manziel and Hoyer and Rex Grossman and somebody else, they're never going to win. And every team in their division, the quarterback is on the field every game. Flacco, Roethlisberger, and Dalton. Until they get to that level, they're just, you know, they're in la-la land.
Well, one of these days, the Browns will have another quarterback that plays every game of the season, but it's probably not going to happen this year. We'll see what happens for the franchise, and we appreciate you taking some time. We'll check out your work at ESPNCleveland.com. Thanks again. Talk to you soon, Tony.
All right, Mike. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Tony Grossi, ESPNCleveland.com. He's been covering that team a long, long time. And, you know, it's a shame because the Browns fans deserve a competitive team. In today's NFL, where the parity evens out the talent, and in theory, you know, every third year, every fourth year, there's 12 playoff teams out of 32 teams. How about every third year you make a legitimate run at playoff contention? Not even make the playoffs. Just make a run at playoff contention. Be alive in the middle of December. The fans of every team deserve better than that. And the fans of Cleveland, who continue to stick with that team through thick and thin, they deserve something. They deserve continuity in the coaching staff, continuity in the front office, continuity at the quarterback position, and overall a competitive team to root for. The fans have held up their side of this. It's now time for the football team to deliver. We'll deliver answers to your questions coming up, but first you need to ask questions. We've got some Twitter questions, but we prefer some phone calls. So pick up that cell phone device and dial 888-237-5269. I'm like Carrot Top. I got props. We'll be right back. It's PFT Live. It is PFT Planet time, and as we always do, we're going to go straight to the first question from the Twitter bag, courtesy of one of our most loyal Twitter question askers, at C. Crawl. Why is the Alden Smith ruling taking so long? And that is a good question. Now, the smart money for this Friday's bad news NFL suspension dump would be Alden Smith, because he's facing a suspension under the personal conduct policy. Reportedly, according to Matt Maiocco of CSN Bay Area, 6 to 8 games is what the 49ers are bracing for. Remember, Smith, a multiple offender under multiple policies, personal conduct and substance abuse. So he would be issued the suspension. He'd have 3 days to appeal. The appeal would have to be resolved. They'd like to get this all wrapped up before the start of the regular season. He met with the commissioner 12 days ago. Possibly longer than that, nearly 2 weeks ago when the 49ers were in Baltimore to play the Ravens. I think a decision needs to come soon, because they need to process the appeal if there will be one. And then the 49ers need to brace for the early part of their schedule. Who knows how many weeks without Alden Smith. Anything other than a suspension at this point would be a surprise. We'll see what happens with Alden Smith. He's got 42 career sacks in 43 career regular season games. And he has looked good so far this year, according to Coach Jim Harbaugh. He's not going to be around for multiple games. How many is multiple? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I expect a ruling soon. Maybe we'll hear something by Friday afternoon, along with Josh Gordon. That's what Tony Grossi of ESPN Cleveland is hearing. And there's been that talk that the Gordon ruling is coming later this week. Coming next, question from at F Purdue Sports. Will all the changes on defense push the Texans back to obscurity with all the mix and match parts that don't fit? And that's a great point. Even though it's still a 3-4 defense, not all 3-4s are the same. The Wade Phillips 3-4 is different from the Romeo Crennel 3-4. And one big difference, J.J. Watt was free to do more pass rushing in the Wade Phillips 3-4. The Crennel 3-4 is the more traditional approach, where the defensive linemen primarily tie up blockers so the linebackers can get to the quarterback. That's good news for linebacker Jadeveon Clowney. Not good news for defensive end J.J. Watt, who will be potentially spending more time tying up 2 and 3 men so that the linebackers can get after the quarterback. And with Watt angling for a new contract, if his stats are down this year, does that make him less attractive? Does that give him less leverage? Does that set the stage for a little more tension? So far, passive-aggressive by J.J. Watt. Maybe it becomes aggressive-aggressive if he feels like this new defense isn't allowing him to be the player that he was the first 3 years of his career. Let's go to Mark in Jersey City. Mark, you're on PFT Live.
Hey, how are you?
Good, buddy.
I was wondering, where do you see the Giants ending up in the division? Because there's questions on both sides of the ball. Earlier, at the beginning of training camp, I thought Amukamara would be, you know, the make or break on defense. But I'm not sure about anything. I want to know what you think is going to play out.
Yeah.
And then offensively, they just don't seem to have it down. Do you think they can, you know, solidify?
Well, you know, it's a work in progress, and thank you for the call. Anytime you're changing an offense with a veteran quarterback, it's a lot like trying to change a tire on a moving car, and it hasn't worked so well for the Giants. I still don't know who the tight end's going to be. The running back position already has taken a hit with the retirement of David Wilson due to multiple neck problems. I think Rashad Jennings could be very good, but will he be good enough? Is the offensive line going to get its job done? It can run block. Can it pass block? Will the receivers hold up their part of the bargain? Is Eli Manning just at the point where, hey, he can win games for you in the postseason, but he can't get you to the postseason? I'm concerned about both lines, defensive and offensive. Pass rush, not what it used to be. I think this is a year where the Giants could struggle, and I could see Giants-Cowboys duking it out for third place and fourth place, respectively, in the basement of the NFC East, with Philadelphia and Washington battling for the top, although I still think it's Philadelphia's division to lose. And until further notice, I'm going to defer to the kings of that division, and I think they can win it by more than the 2 games the Eagles won it by last year. Another question from at Big Tesh. Who's the dark horse to make a run to a conference championship game this year? I think in the AFC, I would go with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've missed the playoffs the last 2 years. As long as they can avoid the Patriots until the AFC title game, I think the Steelers could get there. I think they could beat the Broncos in a 1-game setting if they had to, especially if that game was in Pittsburgh. And it may not be. I think they can handle the Ravens. I think they can handle everybody in that conference if they have to, except the Patriots. I just don't think they historically match up well with New England. I think Tom Brady knows how to pick apart that defense, get rid of the ball quickly before he finds himself flattened by one of those linebackers. I think the Steelers in the AFC. In the NFC, I don't know who you would consider a dark horse. There aren't a lot of teams that you can point at and say, that's a team that's flying under radar. You can make the case. Now, the bad teams are the bad teams, and I don't see the Giants or the Cowboys or the Vikings, although the Vikings will be better. I mean, I guess it would be a dark horse if they make it to the conference title game, but that would be a shock too. Maybe the Bears are a team that you would look at because they didn't make the playoffs last year. I could see the Bears navigating through the playoff tree and getting lucky and getting to the NFC title game. Maybe the Rams. I think some people, now that the Cardinals have taken a hit, the Rams are going to be the trendy pick in the NFC West to disrupt the Seahawks 49ers party. I'd go Bears right now, though. I don't know that how dark of a dark horse that is. But last year they were so bad on defense because of injuries. If they stay healthy on defense, the offense is good, I could see the Bears making some noise come January. Let's take another question from the Twitter, at Josh the Pelto, over under for Cordero Patterson return touchdowns for. I'm going to take the under just because you can't count on four return touchdowns in a year. Patterson is going to be counted on to do more as a receiver this year. Last year he made his impact as a return specialist. And now that you're moving out of the Metrodome, playing outdoors in the elements, those games late in the season at home, are those the best circumstances to run a kickback all the way? I guess you could argue maybe they are because maybe the ball won't travel as far into the end zone. Maybe he'll get more opportunities to return the ball. And maybe the defenses, the coverage teams that haven't had to cover as many kicks because all the kicks are going through the uprights, maybe they're not going to be ready as Cordero Patterson blazes by them. So maybe I've changed my – I still think four is too much. Four is too much. I'll take the under on that. One more Twitter question from at Jay Baradin. Which second-year running backs are in line to have big years? Which ones are going – to bust? I'm going to have to stop and think about second-year running backs. Who was a good rookie running back last year? Are there many? Are there any out there? I remember thinking Kenyon Barner could potentially be something for the Carolina Panthers. They gave up on him last night. They handed him to Philadelphia for a bag of cheesesteak sandwiches, a conditional seventh-round pick. Is there any worse insult in the NFL than be traded for a conditional seventh-round pick? I remember thinking Kenyon Barner could be something. Marcus Lattimore, a guy that was on scholarship last year, he's still inching toward health. I don't know whether or not he's going to be ready to go. I can't think of any rookie running backs that did all that well last year. I'm probably missing somebody, in part because I didn't see that question until just now and didn't have a chance to think about it. Giovanni Bernard is the no-brainer. He feels like a veteran. He's probably the one who's going to have the biggest year because of Hugh Jackson's system in Cincinnati. For the most part, though, you know, the running back position, I know this is the time of year all the fantasy players have questions about the running backs. I think running backs crapshoot because you never know when that supposed workhorse is going to get injured. You never know when that workhorse is going to lose touches to this committee approach that we see in the NFL. And running back is not necessarily a dying breed, but I think back to Ben Tate's comments from earlier in the offseason. If he had to do it all over again, he'd have played safety because there is no safety in being a running back. You get chewed up, you get spit out, and then you're gone, and they go with somebody younger. And there's so many guys every year coming out of the colleges who can move the chains. If you teach them not to fumble, and if you block for them, they can move the chains, they can have an impact, and there will be guys who rise to the occasion. Zach Stacy in St. Louis, while we're talking about second-year guys, he could end up being their starter and end up doing a very good job for them. So I eventually talked my way in circles enough to spit out a couple of names, and we've spit out another edition of DMT Live. We'll be back here again tomorrow. I've got one more day in Stanford before the long journey home. Check us out, NBCSN tonight, 6 o'clock Eastern Time, for a half-hour edition of NBCSN's Pro Football Talk. Tomorrow I'll be doing the Dan Patrick Show again, 9 to 12 Eastern Time. You can watch it on NBCSN and over 275 radio affiliates nationwide, but we prefer that you watch it on NBCSN. See you back here again tomorrow for another edition of PFT Live, and check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com. Have a great day.